Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for December 19th, 2019. Many topics to cover tonight. Next week is Christmas, and Wednesday, that is. And so I'll be the day after Christmas. So should be lots of people with sitting around, family members. Invite new members of the family that maybe have not listened to me before. Invite them to listen next week. So, what a list of topics. Just a couple hours ago, I was a guest on Jeff Rentz's show, so go to the archives of Jeff Rentz and listen to that interview. I've been on quite a few shows recently, the kind of a flurry. For a while, I've not been doing many interviews, and all of a sudden, it seems like quite a few people have invited me to be on their shows. So it was December 11th, which is a Wednesday. I was on, you know, of course, always on the John Moore Show, first thing in the morning, first hour, the Liberty Man. And then on that same day, I was a guest with the Power Hour with Daniel Brigman at the, I think it was the first hour of that show, December 11th. And then in the afternoon with Pastor Butch Paw. And that was a good show. And then Sunday, this past Sunday, the 15th, I was a guest with James Fetzer on the, for 2 hours, and that was a good show. That was a very good interview also, so I suggest you go listen to that. We got into some very interesting topics, and on those shows, I branch out into areas I really don't talk a lot about on my particular show here. I try and keep my topics to science and science-related topics because there's certainly plenty to talk about in that vein. And also, just a little announcement, if you're thinking about getting a whole house water filter, the 15% sale is going to end. And it's going to end at the end of this month. But and the reason being is I'm expanding out. There'll be other people doing affiliate sales. A few select talk show hosts will be doing sales of my water filters. But at that point, the prices are going to go up to normal standard pricing. So 15% off and free shipping now, you can hardly beat that. And I want to talk a little bit about whole house water filters. And first of all, I talk about the benefits when you take a shower. And so some people might say, well, I'm just going to buy me one of those little cheap water filters that go right on the shower head. And let me explain something about water filters. Those things simply do not work. Those little ones you put right on the shower head and it supposedly filters your shower water. Believe me, if you compare that to a real filter, my MR5 and 7s have 5 and 7 filter elements and they're 20 inches long. These are big filter elements, and to get the flow rate that you need to remove chemicals and pollutants at the flow rate you're using in a shower, you need a big filter. It's not this little thing you screw on. Those things last for about 50 gallons, and they take out maybe a small percentage of the chemicals that are in your water. They simply are a marketing gimmick. I'm sure they sell a lot of them, but they just, believe me, they don't work. They're not what you want. Now, let me make another statement. Imagine that you get into the shower every day, your family does, the kids, the wife, everybody's taking a shower in their, you know, and during the day or maybe in the morning, maybe in the evening, but that hot water takes the volatile chemicals and puts it into a vapor. Now, the water is hitting your skin. Your skin is the biggest receptor organ on your body. So anything that touches it is going to go right directly. It's like direct drive into your bloodstream. Then you're breathing it in. And so you're breathing in this vapor. I mean, the first thing that goes into the vapor form are the chemicals. And you're breathing this in for, what, 5 minutes? This is my opinion. I'm not a doctor, but my opinion is this is one of the main causes of the high rate of cancer in the United States is showering in that chemical soup. And to get that out of there, you need a whole house water filter. I know I've sold, I can't even imagine how many countertop filters, the gravity kind and the The above sink inline and the below sink inline. I've sold over the years, over the decades I've been selling these, I've sold boatloads of them, but I'm going to turn my concentration on whole house water filters. I'm still going to offer the kitchen models, but believe me, I'm going to start to try and convince people that you should be getting a whole house water filter. And you might think, oh, this is an advertisement. Well, I'll tell you something. This is about your health, and you got to get those chemicals out of the water. I lived kind of a normal United States kind of lifestyle up to about maybe 10 years ago. And then I've spent probably the last 10 years living in ultra-clean environments, clean water, and a lot of the times the water from the rain or the water from mountain streams or something like that where there's literally no pollution, and then doing a final filter to make sure there's no bacteria. But, you know, I was, if you look at my pictures of 10 years ago, I was overweight, I was bald on top of my head, I had kind of, my skin was okay, but it was, you know, kind of blotchy. And once I started cleaning up my act, eating food that did not have chemicals in it, etc., I started to grow the hair back on the top of my head. I lost weight. All my skin turned back to like a youthful skin. You got to get those chemicals out of your water. Let me tell you, it's really, really important. So anyway, my point is that the whole house water filters are on sale on my webpage. They're 15% off, and that's going away. Free shipping will probably be going away. It cost me probably close to $200 to send one of these babies out to you. To the 48 states, free shipping. If it goes to Hawaii or Alaska, then you got to pay the shipping because they really are charging too much money. But it cost me about probably the better part of $200 to ship this to you, free shipping up until the next week or so. So anyway, if you're interested in the whole house filter, which you should be, compare the price of, say, they start at $1,500 for the MR5, just the MR5. And I think the MR7s are like $2,300. And then you can add on, you get a great reduction in price on replacement filter packs. Now, these filters are going to last you probably a couple of years before you have to change them out. But you can buy also the replacement filter packs. So you have those at your house. Once you buy this, it's a stainless steel container. But compare that to, say, one day of a family member in a cancer treatment center, about $10,000 a day. You know, I'm not saying that this will prevent cancer. I'm just saying that if you are in a chemical-prone area with pollution, then here's what happens. Let me give you a little lesson here in physiology. When you take in chemicals like, say, arsenic or chloramines or which they're adding to water, or fluoride or other cancer-causing chemicals, that are thousands of them in your water, they're accumulative. In other words, your system does not clean them out. That goes into your cells and it stays there. And then the next day you drink water, you take a shower, you breathe in the air that comes in your skin. That is accumulative, and it keeps building and building and building. And like people who, say, do a lot of, say, cleaning, a lot of times get cancer because they're around all those chemicals that's coming in their skin constantly. Even if they're wearing rubber gloves, they're exposed to it, they're breathing it in. And those people, they can get cancer because of the harsh chemicals in cleaning, etc. But in the water, now, by the way, you can send me an email with your zip code and the name of your water company, your water provider company, and I will do a water analysis. And I've been doing this now since probably September. People are sending in their zip code, and I have the email on top of my webpage, jmccsci.com. I have my email there that you can send this to, but send your zip code and the name of your water provider company off your water bill, and I will send you a real analysis of your water. All this data is available in government-based databases, and I can go in there and get the data on your water filter company, or I'm sorry, water provider company, and I will send it to you. And after doing this, I just did one for New York City. Oh, my goodness. Everybody in New York City should have a JMCC water filter in their house or apartment, whatever. The water there is unbelievable. And there's other places in the country. There's rural areas that have horrific pollution in the water. It's just because of industry in the United States. The Environmental Protection Agency, I call it the Environmental Pollution Agency, has given permits to pollute for decades and decades. So our water is horrific, and you can get that chemical sludge out of your water. The water might look clear, but believe me, and once you start using a filter, if you make coffee or tea or, you know, mixed with food or whatever, you're going to notice the difference. Okay, and I'm going to try not to go on and on about this, but believe me, whole house water filters, I'm going to be on my soapbox in 2020 and convincing people that they should be getting whole house water filters. And don't be fooled by the internet. A lot of people are selling water softeners that take out minerals, and they call it a water purifier. It's not a water filter. It does not take out chemicals. My MR5s and 7 whole house water filters are not, I repeat, they are not a mineral reduction. If you have high mineral content, iron or other things, then you need a water softener system before you get to the water filter. And these are put in, the average time that I'm finding people take about 3 to 4 hours, or a plumber 3 to 4 hours to install one of these. And they fit down where your water heater is in that little utility room in your house or apartment or whatever. Okay, enough of that. But the 15% sale and free shipping is coming off. So if you're interested in these whole house water filters, now is the time to get them and, to take advantage of those amazing savings and get extra filter packs. I just should mention, too, that there's 2 other filters that you can purchase separately. It's the spin down filter. It's a sediment filter. If you think you have sediment in your water, if you live on a farm or a ranch, you might want the sediment filter to take out any grit, sand, or anything like that that might be in your water coming up from the well. Or the other possibility is the ultraviolet final filter, and that will kill anything, any virus, any kind of thing that bacteria that gets through the regular filters will be dead on arrival in that UV filter. And so that's the final, and then you can get those as add-ons also. Okay, enough of that. A listener wrote in and asked me about smart meters. She's having a fight with her electric company, who claims that they have the right to put a smart meter on her house. And I asked, is this going on the outside? And she said, yes. And so anyway, I thought I'd make a comment about smart meters, because that's a big issue. Water smart meters and electric smart meters going on houses all around the country. And yes, you can resist this. There are ways. You can write a letter. The letters are online. I'm not going to post this online. You can go in and search this online. There are many groups that will help you write the letter to your electric company and tell them. And if you do this within 30 days, I think, of when they install it, they got to come out and take it off and put a regular meter on. And that regular meter is going to have a little thing stating that there is no smart intelligence in that meter, and that will go on your house. Now, I personally had a problem with this when I was living. This is about maybe 12 years ago. I was living in a house that was mine. It was, you know, it's where I lived. And the city was insistent that they were going to put a smart water meter in my house, in the basement. And it turns out that the city engineer cut the deal and made a contract, and this company, the smart meter company, changed hands. And the city manager, I went and said, you can't do this. And they said, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with these smart meters. We're told by the company that there's nothing nefarious about them. And I'm like, you know, excuse me. But no, this is not the way it's going to happen. So there was a showdown at my house. I had WCCO television there at my house in the street filming as the police came up, as the engineer from the city came up, and they were going to march into my house and put the smart meter in my house. Well, obviously, they were dealing with the wrong guy. It did not happen. They got a lot of publicity, and they did not put the meter in my house. They ended up putting it on the outside of the house, and I no longer live there. That was like 10 years ago. But anyway, just letting you know where this has been. So now there's a much better organization on the internet. You can go online, etc. But the real reason for smart meters, and by the way, remember they were trying to push for the intelligent grid, the smart grid, everything's smart. You got a smartphone, you got a smart meter, you got a water, electric, you got a smart grid. Everything's smart these days. Well, the problem is they're there to invade on your privacy. They can read when you're home. Let me explain something. The way electricity works. If your kids come home from school, that smart meter can tell that there's just one kid in the house. And this can be hacked. This information could be hacked. Somebody could be going after school, checking out all the houses in the neighborhood where there's only one kid, or targeting your kid as the only person in the house after school. And then they could determine, okay, well, at this time, the parents come home, because then the garage door comes up, and they would be able to detect all of this information about your electric usage, and through either the electric company or hackers. I mean, this is information going out over the airwaves. This is radio communication that's going on. Plus, then there's the EMF issue. If you can measure the electromagnetic radiation coming off of that smart meter, you can measure it. So anyway, there's all of these problems, and how this stuff came into being, or how 5G telephones could be rammed down your throat, or even 4G. Remember that I just saw an interview with Edward Snowden. Very good interview. It was October 23rd, 2019. You can look it up, and I forget the talk show host. He's a YouTube regular. I watch his channel regularly, but I forget his name. But he interviewed Edward Snowden, so look for the Edward Snowden interview, October 23rd, 2019, just recent. And it's a very good interview about the invasion of your life through smartphones, and that you don't have the ability to control that. If you remember a number of years ago, just a little background, I worked for 25 years in the telecommunications industry as a senior engineer, designing and implementing hardware and software. I was not a programmer. I was a engineer in design, high-level design, designing IBM-compatible front-end processors. These are very sophisticated telecommunications devices with encryption and security, etc., to communicate between high-level computer centers. And so anyway, that's what I did, part of my existence. And then I spent another 15 years managing, and literally that was the title, was managing digital networks. And so, and I can talk about this now because those are all past history. And during all of those years where you heard me in public on radio shows, I was doing this full as a career. That's how I made my living. But I didn't announce it because they go after your income, the powers that be. So that was something. And, of course, those were secure positions where they were a high level of security with those positions. So it was secret from their point of view also. But anyway, I heard this interview with Edward Snowden explaining about how phones are invasion of your privacy. They collect all of your information, where you are, where you've been, what time you go to sleep at night, even if your phone is turned off. And then I was going to mention a couple of years ago, I did a fundraiser for what I called Windroid's 11 OS. And with my previous experience, this is something I very much was capable of doing. And it really never got off the ground. What this was going to be was a replacement operating system for phones, for smartphones, for Windows and Android. So I combined those two words. I called it Windroids, And at the time, Windows was version 10 for the operating system on phones, and so I called it 11. So the next stage would be a Windows 11, so to speak, operating system OS. And so it was called Windroid's 11 OS. And as I was doing that, the control hooks to monitor your phone moved from the operating system by the phone companies and the people that control that whole industry. It moved from the operating system into the hardware. So basically, there's no software that you could load into that telephone to override the hardware hooks that were put in there to monitor your information. So anyway, all of this going on. Just a quick note on a number of the recent interviews where I was interviewee. We talked about the voter fraud, and of course, I did this voter fraud study published in January 2017 dealing with voter fraud and showing how, for example, the 2016 presidential election, Hillary Clinton got no less than 17 million cheating votes. And the way they do that, the primary way, is through absentee ballots. That's the primary way. And then just stuffing the ballot box with fake votes, boxes and boxes full of votes where nobody came in and voted, literally. And so right now, people are preparing for the 2020 election, especially with absentee ballots and filling out votes. And so people say, well, we got to move to paper ballots. Well, moving to paper ballots does not cure either one of these major problems. And then, of course, you have the illegal alien vote and other, you know, factors, all of these adding up. But at any rate, I wanted to mention that this is occurring at the local levels. And this issue we have in Virginia right now, where you have a Democrat as governor trying to invoke seizure of personal arms, where he wants to send the National Guard out to confiscate arms from police departments. It's just insane. He wanted to start a civil war. Anyway, that's other people are reporting on that, so I'm not going to report on it here. But it's a clear-cut case in Virginia where this guy got elected through fraudulent means. And if you go back to the 2016 election, the senator from that state, remember all of the kickback money from the guy and his wife from Virginia and related to the Clinton Foundation, etc. Anyway, I just wanted to mention, relative to this, Georgia recently removed over 300,000 registered voter names. Now, these are people who did not respond. The way they determined these names is they sent out a mailer to the address, the last registered address of people on the voter rolls. And people, when they received this, were supposed to fill it out, say, yes, this I'm still here, send it back. And it was a campaign to locate the people who were no longer at their residence. So they came up with over 300,000. Now that is 4%. That's only 4% of the population of Georgia. But this turns out to be a huge percentage of the voting population, especially if you're dealing with like midterms or congressional elections where fewer people turn out to vote. So you can easily swing state and local and county and local elections with that many unregistered or unverified voters. And so what they do is they take all of those people, the Democrats, and they fill out the votes and they send them in through the mail. And those people vote. And the Republican governor there got this pushed through, where they went and removed 300,000 names of people who were no longer there or dead. And the Democrats formed what they called political action group. It was a fair action group. That's what they called it, for fair elections. I mean, these people, that's how they've been winning elections for decades. This goes all the way back to Lyndon Johnson, who is the expert at this. There's a famous quote that those dead people, there's Lyndon Johnson going through a cemetery writing down names. And the quote was that those people, those dead people, have as much right to vote as you do. So Johnson was an expert at cheating, and this is carried through the Democratic Party up to today. Except today, it's big business. This is big full-time business, and that's how they've been winning elections. And so you can tell in Virginia, this joker that's governor should have never won the election, but massive cheating is in place there. In Georgia, they're trying to clean it up. In next-door neighboring Kentucky, there's voter fraud that occurred in the recent elections. And I said on James Fetzer's show, this is the number one problem in America today is voter fraud. And this is how they do it. And, of course, the end result is there's other types of voter fraud like campaign finance where they're financing rich people from outside of the U.S. or, say, Bloomberg or people like that put millions of dollars into a candidate, and what they're doing now is they're trying to go out and find Republican candidates, which are known as rhinos. They're part of the system, and they're trying to get these people elected, and they're turncoats. They pretend like they support Trump until they get into office, and then they switch. And so anyway, they do this through cheating, is done through campaign finance, negative smear campaigns, lying about issues, candidates that flip once they're in office, and of course they're targeting gun control, smart meters, youth education. The list goes on and on. So at any rate, just a quick comment on changing gears here. Wind and solar get huge subsidy kick again from the government, and I knew this would happen. I knew that the Congress would buckle and fold as soon as they were put under pressure from these lobbying companies, and to the point where they can get up to 25% up to 33% of their cost of their installations through government subsidies. Now, you're paying for this. You're paying for this garbage that does not work. If these were viable businesses, you go back 20 years, they've been getting these subsidies for 20 years. And this year, 2019, those subsidies ran out again. So what are they doing? They're back at Congress lobbying to get more subsidies because these businesses of three-blade wind turbines and solar panels have never worked. They're not a viable option. They don't make a profit. They cannot be made profitably. Their profit is the subsidy that you provide through your tax dollars. So once again, like I say, Congress has folded. The solar industry historically always got a lot more. And so they didn't fare quite as well in this round of subsidy bargaining at the federal level. They didn't get as much as the wind industry, but the wind industry has somewhat been lagging behind. So probably the scores are nearly even at this point. But they can slip these things also in on the back of some other bill, so that they would slip something in on the, you know, the last page of some omnibus bill. I suspect the solar industry will get their 2 cents worth of subsidies also somehow through the back door. Anyway, absolutely disgusting where these companies, General Electric and Siemens and Vesta, putting out garbage equipment that really does not work. Now, just think about this. Think about a three-blade wind turbine. I'm sure you've all driven through these out in the countryside. You see fields and fields of these things, and they're all sitting still. They have a motor inside them to get them started. They have an electric motor in there, and one of the big secrets of the whole industry is how much energy it costs to make those blades turn with the little a big electric motor inside to make them turn. And so, no, this is a giant scam. And like I say, the only reason they're a profitable business is because of you giving them subsidies, very high subsidies. No other industry gets this kind of benefit. and this will go on for another 5 years, you know, especially then it'll make, see what that does, it makes it viable for some politician in a local state or federal office to give the permits because they know they're going to get their money. They know that, but one of the big problems is the decommissioning of these things after they break down, after the first 4 or 5 years, after they break down, who's going to pay for their removal? I talked about the installation in Minnesota. It was rated for like 25 years. It wasn't even 8 years, and they're decommissioning the entire site of three-blade wind turbines because they're broken. They don't work. They've never provided. There's no cost estimate of how much energy they've provided. And so anyway, there's more and more information coming out on this, but Congress keeps passing this. They keep rubber stamping these subsidies because, well, somebody's in their back pocket. What else can you say? It's as clear as that. Here's a story from, this is by the Detroit River, a uranium deposit. It was like a big uranium deposit of uranium waste next to the Detroit River buckled and slid into the river. Oh, my goodness. You know, I'll tell you something. If you live next to any of those rivers up, the, you know, along the Great Lakes or dumping into the Great Lakes or any of the other rivers that flow south, man, you need a water filter. You got to get the, it's just, you don't even know what's in your water. Like I said, you can send me information and I can get information about what's in your water. But every day there's more and more stuff being dumped into these water systems, and a lot of it they don't even know about. So this would be something that would not come up even on a recent study. This is a recent deposit, and I'm amazed too, as I look around the country as I'm completing these water studies for people, the number of people that have uranium in their water, or radon. Radon is an indicator of uranium. Radon gas, if it's in your water, then it's probably in your basement in your house. It's a poisonous gas. It's a result of the decay, the natural decay of uranium. And so if you have radon in your water, then there's a high probability that you also have radon in the air in your house. Okay, so you can get a test. You can go to, I don't know if it's like your home improvement center or the local government. I don't remember where you get these kits, but it's a kit to measure the radon in your house. And the radon comes up through cracks and seams in your foundation. If you have a foundation, good, and if you have uranium somewhere deep down in the ground under your house, there's a good chance that radon is coming up through the ground, leaching through these cracks and just little teeny cracks because that air is trying to rise up and get out of there. It's, radon is a gas. And so you would have this radon gas coming in your house. It's poisonous. You gotta get your house. If you have radon in your water, you probably have it in your house air, and you have to seal your basement so that it's not coming in your house. And these are real issues. And also our water filters remove this. Now, the reason I don't advertise that we take out radioactive material is people get the false impression that somehow the filter stops radiation, and that's, excuse me, it's not the case for anything. We remove the heavy metals, which would be removing uranium, but you have to be very careful when you start talking about removing radiation. If you advertise removing radiation, that implies that you're blocking X-rays or beta particles or alpha particles or something else, and that's not the case. So the implication and what people associate with radiation, you have to be very careful. And so all we do is we group the elements like uranium and other related they're grouped in what we call heavy metals. Heavy metals removal, and that's a different way of saying you're removing the source from the water, and so but you're not blocking radiation. So it's a fine line there, and that's just one of those idiosyncrasies of the English language and of people's misunderstanding. Okay, on to the New Zealand White Island volcano. Oh my goodness. 27 people are on the island and visiting with a Carnival cruise ship that lands people on the island, and they walk up to the crater and look over the side of the crater. And as they're standing there, this volcano goes wham and just blows up. I mean, there are people are missing. There's allegedly about, well, the report is that there's about 27 people with severe burns. Some of them may not make it. A terrible tragedy. And the last time this volcano erupted was like 2001. So that's, you know, what, 18 years ago when this thing went off before. But it's probably, if you have volcanoes that are active, that active, it's probably not a good idea to start bringing a cruise ship around to walk on it. There's nothing else on this island. It's just a volcanic island. You know, somebody ought to have their head examined a little bit here for setting up a cruise. And when you sign up for a cruise, you know, John Moore made a joke. He's having a cruise in the Caribbean, or I think it's maybe it's out of Florida, I believe, and in the first part of the year 2020 here. But he made a comment on TV that, on the radio, that he was not taking people to a volcanic island. But yeah, you should not be packing a cruise ship full of people and taking them off to an island whose last eruption was in 2001, in 2001. I mean, that's not that long ago geologically. This is an active volcano. And, I mean, here's, you know, all of these people who got on a cruise ship thinking that, you know, maybe someone had thought about safety. Apparently not. Anyway, a terrible tragedy. But, yeah, stay away from active volcanoes. There are something like 5 volcanoes active up in the Olympic chain up by Seattle in that region, and these things can go off, and they go off all of a sudden. But stay away from active volcanoes. I've been on the side of many volcanoes in my life, but some very active volcanoes. But you have to be very cautious. You have to stay away from, you know, the flow sides, etc. A lot of times there's a side that's more prone to flow than other. But a volcano is like a wild animal. You just don't know what it's going to do. So best stay away from active or recently active volcanoes. Here's a story about European Union. The leaders are including nuclear as a source of green power. Now, I've talked about this before. Absolutely insane. Nuclear power is the most polluting form of energy there is. When you get done with the nuclear fuel, there's no place to put it. There's no long-term storage solution. There simply is not. You can put the waste material wherever you want. You can put it in containers. But eventually, those containers are going to break down. Let's imagine, in fact, I dealt with a problem of just similar to this when I was dealing with my study of the Nazca Lines. If you remember, a number of years ago, I was in Peru, and I was doing some other things. I was on my way down to Cusco, and I just happened to stop by the Nazca Lines. And so I stopped on the way down, driving down. I drove from Lima down to Cusco, in a car, in a rental car, and which was an experience in itself. It's not like renting a car in the U.S. You get a rental car in Lima, Peru, it's, you know, It's not a 2000 and not a recent make and model. Let's put it that way. Anyway, so I, on the way down to Cusco, I stopped at the Nazca lines, looking at them, etc., then studying them online. And then when I came back through, going back to Lima, I stopped again at the Nazca lines and went up on one of the mounds there, which I instantly determined was man-made, and then looked out across the field. And that's where it all hit me like a ton of bricks, that these are antennas. These are antenna systems out there on the desert floor. And the only way they could possibly have been made is from above, from high up in the air. So at any rate, getting back to the idea of metal. And so one of the things I looked for was, how did they power these antennas? And so I looked around for metal, any shred or any remnant of metal. But in that environment, which is not near the ocean, but still there's enough salt and acid that comes through the air in that region to decay or break down any metal. And there's, even though it's a very dry region, there would be enough rain over the period of thousands and thousands of years. In other words, let me put it this way. If you took a car and you put it out on the Nazca Plains and left it there for 5,000 years, you probably wouldn't find anything left after that period of time. That's metal. I don't care what kind of pieces, or aluminum or steel or copper or whatever kind of metals might be in that automobile. It would be gone in a period of 5,000. There wouldn't be a shred. There wouldn't be anything visible. Maybe a bolt that got stuffed under a rock someplace might survive that long, but probably not. So anyway, the point is that when you go to store nuclear fuel, the immediate solution, putting it in a container, is short term. I mean, we're talking in terms of thousands of years. There's no container that you're going to make that's going to contain that nuclear waste forever. Secondly, the modern nuclear fuel has to be cooled. It has to be chilled. And this is an ongoing problem because it's a problem with no return. It's a problem that gets bigger every day. The more nuclear fuel you burn, then the spent fuel rods, what do? You put them in a cooling system. That was the problem with Fukushima. They had 600,000 spent fuel rods on the roof of the Daiichi Fukushima power plants. And those went up in smoke the day those towers exploded. I mean, that just went into the atmosphere. They vaporized. All of those spent fuel rods went into the atmosphere. And then a lot of it also went into the groundwater. And then they came in and they started dumping tremendous amounts of water down into the reactor to try and cool it down, because it literally went China syndrome. In other words, if you're not familiar with China syndrome, that's where a nuclear meltdown occurs and it burrows a hole down into the ground all the way to China. That's the implication, the China syndrome. But Japan would go all the way through to Earth, to maybe New York City. Who knows? We'd call it the New York City syndrome. But the idea is that a meltdown of a nuclear reactor is going to melt through. There's no container that can contain this. And the end result for the fuel rods also is there is no container long-term that is going to contain this fuel. And it's the most highly polluting. If you took 20 fuel rods and threw them out into the lake behind your house or up the river from where your town is or whatever, those are going to continue to pollute for the next 10, 20, 30,000 years. I mean, this is not a green solution. It is not a green future. Nuclear power is not green. And the reason they're calling it green, this is a promotion set out by misinformation from General Electric and Siemens, the two biggest suppliers of nuclear power in the world. That's why they don't want Iran to develop nuclear power. They don't want these little countries to develop nuclear power, because then they'd have to compete, and those countries would be able to undersell what GE and Siemens are selling for a big margin. So anyway, no, there's a lot of politics involved here. So at any rate, this is absolutely insane world of nuclear energy that we live in. It's probably, I would say, nuclear, along with voter fraud, nuclear energy industry and disinformation is one of the biggest, most corrupt industries on the planet by far. Hands down, take the oil industry. The oil industry doesn't hold a candle to the nuclear industry in terms of corruption, misinformation, the public being used and abused. And, if you talk anything from nuclear weapons to nuclear armament, the using hardened uranium tips on shells in conventional warfare or for armor piercing or using fuel for nuclear reactors. Good grief. This is just an absolute nightmare. And a friend of mine, I used to be on his radio show. He doesn't have his radio show anymore, but he said that the nuclear uranium and plutonium were the devil's rocks. That's what he called them, the devil rocks. And it's really true. But the European Union, by political edict, is calling nuclear green energy. And the reason they're saying that is because it's low carbon emission. Now, that's a farce in itself. As I said on my show, I'll just repeat the basics here, is that when you talk about so-called carbon emission and global climate change, which would imply global warming, increase in heat content in the air, it doesn't hold a candle to the amount of heat that's put into the air every day when you're burning nuclear, coal, or natural gas, the big three, for the generation of electricity, or petroleum for transportation. The amount of heat generated right now, we're not talking about greenhouse effect in 20 years, we're talking heat being pumped into the atmosphere right now. Of every 10 coal train cars that dump coal at an electric power plant, or in a boat to burn for fuel or whatever, for every 10 railroad cars, 8 of them, the heat generated from those 8 cars goes directly into the atmosphere, and it's lost in the process of creating electricity. 80%. The Carnot cycle maximum would say something like 67%. But when you look at all the other inefficiencies and delivery costs, electric heating delivery costs and conversions and everything else that goes on. And then when you get to the final customer, when you put on your toaster, your stove, or what else, the other 20% goes into heat anyway. So you may as well just say 100% of that eventually within a day goes into direct heating of the atmosphere. We're not talking about 20 years down the road greenhouse effect, which is a farce anyway. And you know what happens with all that heat? Every night when Earth turns around to nighttime, all that heat is lost up into the upper atmosphere and goes off into outer space every day. So don't worry about some little teeny-weensy greenhouse effect in 20 years. That's a political football. It was started by Carl Sagan, one of the worst scientists in the history of mankind, and one of the most damaging scientists, because he started all of this malarkey, as we say in Ireland, all of this baloney, as they say in other countries, or all of this, as they say in the U.S., BS, spell it out. Yep, that was Carl Sagan, one of the worst scientists in the history of planet Earth. That's where all of this started. Okay, so I've got about 10 minutes left. As we go into Christmas time here, I got an email from somebody, and I've mentioned on my radio show that the Christmas star was a comet, a very unusual comet. So unusual that three different kings from three different countries, unbeknownst to each other, were watching for this sign in the heavens, and when it appeared, they packed their bags And after thousands of years of being passed down by verbally, etc., waiting for this sign in the heavens, they packed their bags and started moving, and it came to rest over the stall at Bethlehem, where Christ was born. So if you look at all the properties that this comet had, one of them had to be that it was very unusual. Something so unusual that it was only, you know, so unusual that it would be apparent to these three different kings in three different countries. And why were there three? You know, if you look at these stories, there always is a purpose. If it was one, you'd say, just happenstance. The guy, you know, saw something up in the sky and he, you know, packed his bags and left. If it were two, you'd go, still happenstance, chance, you know. Three different kings observing the same thing in three different countries to the east, all packing their bags and arriving at the same place, meeting along the way, caravan, and then traveling together for safety. There was something very special about this. So this listener writes in, and he goes, the Christian religion has always accepted the star Sirius and the three belt stars of Orion in a position on a certain day of the year, and that was the alleged star of Bethlehem. Well, sorry, buddy, but the problem is this happens every year, allegedly. Sirius with the belt stars of Orion alignment is baloney because they're fixed in position in the sky. So there's nothing, you know, amazing about what they're doing. The Earth is, relative to them, is the same every night. So there's, you know, that's what we call the astronomical calendar. The stars in the heavens stay the same every night. It's just that we adjust a little bit. In terms of the sun, which in terms of sun time, but relative to the stars and the Earth spinning on its axis, it changes every 26,000 years because Earth is precessing on its axis. But in the course of, the year, Orion and Sirius are in the same place every night. There's no special alignment that happens once a year. So I'm not quite sure what these people are smoking out there. But even if there was, that happens every year, allegedly, according to them. So how could something that happens every year be so special that these guys who are passed down information, waiting for thousands of years for this special celestial event to happen, how could that be something that happens every year? Well, that's ridiculous. And so they're trying everything in the book to try and dissuade the public from ever thinking about comets in the Bible. And there are many instances of comets in the Bible, big comets. One is the Christmas star. Another one is the Noah's flood. Another one is the Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt. The list goes on and on. So, and the biggest issue with comets is that they don't want you to understand the real issue of comets, because the people in power on this planet Earth know that they cannot control what's going on in the heavens, and they know that once the public finds out about this, they are going to understand also that the people who are leaders don't have any control over what's going on in the heavens. So that's the core issue, and I have lectures that go back years where I talk extensively about the Christmas star. It was a comet, a very unusual comet. In my estimate, having studied comets for the better part of my life and understanding that they are electrical in nature, that they are related to electrical phenomena and the discharge of the solar capacitor, etc., that what would be so unusual about a comet? Well, it would be that probably it had two companions. And remember that this is what the CIA freaked out about in the late 1980s when Robert Harrington of the Naval Observatory discovered what literally was known as Planet X in the secret world of the CIA, etc. And remember, that's why Dan Golden was brought in from the CIA into NASA to put the lid on all of this. I finally discovered all of this, and I have a DVD on my webpage which describes all of this. It's a downloadable DVD. But Hale-Bopp was discovered before it became a comet. The nuclei, there was a small one orbiting the bigger one. And with that, they could determine the mass of the central object, the central core nucleus of Hale-Bopp, and it was planetary in size. And so anyway, that's another long story. But Hale-Bopp was a comet with a companion. And so that's a whole story in itself. But what could be so unusual that it would be something that when you saw it, you go, that's it. And so my estimate is that even comets with a single companion would be common. The thing that would be really, really unusual would be a star, a comet that looks like a star with a tail on it, of course, in the sky, but with two companions. So that those companions would be orbiting the primary nucleus and creating literally quite a light show in the sky. And this idea that it came to rest over the stall at Bethlehem is simply very explainable by, for example, the fact that they discovered it in the east but followed it to the west is a very common characteristic of comets as it goes around the backside of the sun. And then if it came around the night side of Earth, it could come on a path to where it literally for a number of hours stood over the Bethlehem, the site at Bethlehem. So all of this is very explainable, but at any rate, these get into some fairly complicated astronomical orbital issues dealing with comets. But there's no question that the Christmas star was a comet, a very unusual comet. Okay. So with that said, I'll talk to you next year. And then one more show, and we're into 2020. Next year, I'll just read down the products that are on my website available. Remember that my whole house water filters, that 15% sale and free shipping is going to come off at the end of this year. So get your orders in for that. Also, I have Numana food storage food on my website now, all my water filters, 15% off, and those sales will probably be ending fairly soon also, probably towards the end of the year. I have the wing generator. New on my list of things that I'm selling are the shipping containers. So go to my webpage. You can send in an email. We'll send you an information packet on how to buy shipping containers or how to build a shipping container building. These are hurricane-proof. These are never-used containers. These are not used containers. They are brand-new containers. Remember the webpage, www.jmccsci.com. Seven letters, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.